dear friends, we continue today. It'll be about a month now, 4 weeks, since we had our last blast in the series of talks on the lives of the patriarchs. So we're going to remind you briefly of the lesson that had gone before. Do you remember that Jacob had spent a goodly number of years serving his uncle Laban? There were 14 years that he served for Rachel alone, 7 before he got her to wife, and 7 after that time. And then there were 6 more years beyond that. But altogether, he served Laban
20 years.
He was quite advanced in years.
When he left the land of Mesopotamia and journeyed homeward, it is no wonder then that his mother, Rebecca, had died. Esau was still there. And I can imagine how he must have felt on times in this far away land, far away from his father, far away from his mother. And his life wasn't an easy one. It was the most difficult and hard life. Because his uncle was not a man who valued the sincerity of heart, nor one who put any great esteem upon the precious promises that were made to Abraham. But he was a man that was more or less worldly. He was out for anything that he could get. When he found Jacob was such a goodly man, he just took him over. He'd asked him what his wages might be. He says, "Oh, just that I might have Rachel to wife." And of course, that pleased Laban. And he permitted him to work 7 years, and then at the end of 7 years of the wedding, were the trials and the difficulties, but he never lost faith in the promise. God had assured him on numerous occasions. And so after Joseph was born, this, by the way, was Rachel's firstborn, he thought that he'd like to go back home, and he asked Laban to send him home. He might have left, but he asked him to send him home. That surely was most honorable under the circumstances. But Laban was loath to allow him to go home. His own sons couldn't have been as good insofar as the caring of the cattle were concerned, caring for the cattle was concerned. So he said, "Now, isn't there anything, any wages that I can give you? Isn't there anything that I might do for you?" Well, after having worked all of these years, Jacob had nothing except 4 wives and 12 children. In time, he would have 13, but so far he had 12. Of course, that counts for 11 brethren and 1 sister. So you'll remember that he did agree on one condition. And it's a beautiful little story because it shows how God takes the wise and their craftiness. The sheep and the cattle of the East are very peculiar. The sheep are generally white, solid white. The goats are dark, spotted. And so in making this arrangement in which Jacob would look to God to vindicate him, Jacob said, "Now, I'll care for your cattle, but I want you to give me all of those that are not white, those that may be marked, spotted, speckled, striped, and the rest will be yours. And of course, thought that was a wonderful arrangement, because the cattle generally did not run that way. And he chuckled up his sleeve. He thought, well, I've taken him in again. But he was figuring without God. Those whom God loves, he might allow them to be put to the test, to come way down to the darkness of the valley before he permits a little ray of light to penetrate and cheer the weary heart. And so was it in this case with Jacob. Jacob had learned a great many things while taking care of his uncle's sheep and the rest of the cattle. And you know, so he arranged that when the breeding time came for the cattle, that he would place rods, fresh green rods, in other words, they weren't green in color, but they were from fresh trees, and he would scrape off around those twigs just finely so that it would be striped, as it were, so that as you looked at the rod, there would be dark, light, dark, light, dark, light. And he placed these sticks in the watering trough where the cattle would come to drink. And as they can see under these conditions, the impression made upon the mind of the mother of the cattle to be born was such that when that which was conceived was given birth, it bore the marks of those things. They were speckled, they were spotted. And as the strongest of these cattle came forth, Jacob saw to it that he would set those aside for himself. You see? Well, of course, you say, well, that was Jacob. But God was merely vindicating Jacob in this, you understand? And I think in this connection, dear friend, of what the lesson might mean for you and for me. And I think of it in this way, that we're all in the act of conceiving, that Christ is being formed in us. And that while this is going on, as we come down to the watering trough, which is the Bible itself, God's word of truth, there has been placed a living rod in the water, which bears that spiral through it. The light represents the love of righteousness of the man Christ Jesus. The dark represents his hatred of iniquity. And as we look upon Christ, and we are in this formative period, the pattern should be repeated in us. We should become lovers of righteousness. Now, while I think there is a general lesson for all of us in that, I think there is one especially for elders, that as the flock comes down to water and be refreshed by the waters of truth, they must see to it that they keep the rod ever before the eyes of the sheep which come to drink. That rod represents Christ. Christ Jesus. But, dear friends, not there wasn't but one rod, but there were a number of rods. And I'm inclined to think perhaps we could consider not only Christ in his love of righteousness and hatred of iniquity, but perhaps others of the apostles of Jesus, particularly the apostle Paul. For it is he who brings to our attention the fact that it was because of Jesus' love of righteousness and hatred of iniquity that he was anointed with the oil of gladness above his fellows. Well, you can just about imagine what happened when Jacob was amassing quite a little herd for himself, and the strongest of the cattle now belonged to Jacob. Of course, Laban was already rich. But it wasn't by Laban's own activity in the field, but it was because of Jacob that Laban got rich. And sometimes, you know, we feel, dear friends, that our employers little know how much of the success of their ventures oftentimes traces to the fact that one of God's servants is in one way or another identified with the institution. However, we find that the sons of Laban, they were not slow to repeat what they saw into the ears of Laban. And Jacob notices that the appearance of the countenance of Laban isn't as it used to be. And at this time it was that God definitely spoke to Jacob and told him that he might return. And commencing at the 31st verse of the 31st chapter, the first verse of Genesis, and he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and beheld it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. Now that's the promise that God had made before. You remember, on his way to Mesopotamia, you know, in the nighttime he fell asleep, and he used, as it were, a stone for a pillow. Even as you and I sometimes are permitted to use our burdens for pillars. What's the object? Well, as we lay our heads upon those pillows, suddenly there appears the vision, as it did to Jacob, a ladder. True, it stood on the earth, but it was let down from heaven. And so when we get into trial and difficulties, God gives us an assurance. He lets down a ladder from heaven, and it finds its place on the earth right near us. But mind you, if it weren't for the fact that we were weary in the way, we wouldn't be rested there. And so God sometimes has to send the weariness, has to send the darkness, ere we will take the time to rest and allow God's angel to minister unto us. We've got to be so busy. We've got so many things to do, you know. We don't have time for all that we would like to do. And all that we ever do is say, well, we have so much to do and we don't find time to do it. Sometimes what would be more important than doing the things that you feel you ought to do, it would be better for you to lie down for a while and rest by the wayside and use your burden for a pillow, and then look for the heavenly vision, the ministry of God's angels, as they ascend into his presence, which they behold at all times, and come back laden with blessings and favor upon his beloved. So we say, dear friends, it was at that time that he gave him the assurance. Not only would he get into Mesopotamia, but he would also be brought back to his own land, the land of his fathers, which was not the land which Abraham called the land of his father. It was the land of Canaan. That was the land of Jacob's fathers. And so we find then, it says, and Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock. Now you see, so that there might not be any mixing up of these flocks, Jacob's flock was 3 days' journey away from the flock which belonged to Laban. And I say, dear friends, there must ever be the 3 days' journey between the flock of God and the flocks of the world, if you know what I mean. Just so far apart that there can't be the intermingling. That will always weaken the threat. It'll weaken the character of the cattle. And you see, if you're not 3 days' journey removed from the world, there's a tendency for you to mix with the world. And as you mix with the world, you will find that your character suffers accordingly. You're weakened. You're not as strong as you once were, spiritually speaking, but you don't recognize it, no. But you suffer proportionately. And so as we find in this word of God here, the picture of Jacob and Laban, the flock of Jacob was 3 days' journey away. And that 3 days' journey, dear friend, is repeated in the scripture so many, many times. When Israel was down in Egypt, you remember, and Moses was sent before Pharaoh to ask that the children of God, the Israelites, might be released. It was so that they might go 3 days' journey into the wilderness there to serve God and to sacrifice unto him in the place that he would direct. That's the purpose of the 3 days' journey. Separation. There must be separation. You can't commingle, you see, with the world. There must be this separation. And so there were these 3 days' journey. Now came the shearing time. And for some reason or other, instead of Jacob being down there with Laban's flock, under some pretext, he went back to his own flock. And he asked Rachel and Leah to come there to meet him. And when they got there, he told them of what he had planned to do. And he said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. Notice, the God of my father hath been with me. He doesn't call him his God, but the God of my father. You may see the reason for that after a while. And ye know that with all my power I have served your father. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God suffered him not to hurt me. Now, dear friends, this 10 times may merely be a figure of speech. It may be more than 10 times. 10 is often used in the scriptures as a symbol of a complete cycle. The Israelites tempted the Lord,
it is said, 10 times.
The time came, the crisis was reached, when God says, now you shall not go into the land, but you'll be turned back into the howling, the terrible wilderness. 10 times, you see. 10 kings, 10 commandments. All of these, of course, are significant. But suffer it to be, as it is stated, let us assume that it was 10 literal times. That certainly would be bad enough. I think if your boss changed your salary twice to your disadvantage, which it was in this case, of course, I don't think you'd continue to work for it. But you see, there was something about Jacob. It was also in Isaac. It was also in Abraham. They were peaceable, peace-loving. Do you remember how that Isaac moved 3 times so that those who had taken advantage of his goodness might have what he had? And you say, well, there was principle involved. Of course there was principle involved. But nevertheless, he allowed them to have it. Wasn't it his? Of course it was his. But for the sake of peace, he denied himself. And we find that in Jacob too. He didn't argue with his uncle.
I don't know if he ever complained about his treatment. At least there isn't anything suggested. And there's a big lesson here for us, too, you know. If Jacob, who was neither a Christian nor a Jew, he couldn't have been a Jew. He was the first one to be known as Israel. And the first Israelite was not a Jew. Well, you asked me about it afterwards. So at any rate, when you find that there is so much good in a character like Jacob, who didn't have the benefit of all that you and I have the benefit of, where do we stand alongside of these? And I think oftentimes when we do consider these ancient worthies, and we are to consider them, aren't we? We're to consider their faithfulness and the trials they endured. And in all of these things, they never lost faith. But sometimes when you and I come up against a stone wall of some kind, we begin to doubt. I wonder whether the Lord has really given me up. I don't seem to have the assurance I once had. Well, maybe that doesn't come to you. Maybe Satan hasn't gotten that far yet. But if you truly is, that if must come. It is a part of the temptation which came to Christ. If you be the Christ, if you're the Son of God, you do this, you do that. He says he's going to do so and so for you, now prove it. When you get into trial or difficulty, what do you do? So he says, I know, and ye know, that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. That's the same with Job, you know. You can go so far, but you can't take his life. Satan will be privileged, permitted to buffet you, yes, and God will permit it. But it'll be for your good. I remember Paul when he speaks of his thorn in the flesh. He says, a messenger from Satan sent to buffet me. Oh, but you say from Satan. But then, didn't God say, my grace is sufficient for thee? So that the grace of God was identified with the messenger of Satan. Strange as it may seem, that is often the case. And so here, while God permitted Jacob to be so tried and so tested, the heir of the promise would of necessity have to be tried. He would have to develop a character worthy of the inheritance. And thus we find it then here. But he couldn't hurt him. If he had said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then the cattle bear speckled. And if he had said thus, the ring strake shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ring strake. You see, no matter which way he said it, God would have seen to it that Jacob got what Jacob was to get. And so he says, thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ring-straked and speckled and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in the dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see, all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ring-straked, speckled, and grizzled. And I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Beth-el, where thou anointest the pillar. In other words, he brings his mind back to the place where the ladder was let down from heaven and the angels ascended and descended. And he reminds him of that. He says, I am the God of Beth-el, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowedest a vow to me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there any portion or any inheritance for us in our father's house? Had he not sold these two girls, his two daughters? When he gave them as wages, that was equivalent to selling them. He was getting rich by them, you see. In other words, instead of paying a price for services, he gave his daughters. And thus we find that he had used all that he got as a result of that transaction, which involved Rachel and Leah. When they became the wives, as it were, of Jacob, whatever he got back in service from Jacob, he had used for himself. And if there had been any heritage for the daughters of Jacob, it no longer existed, and they recognized this. Are we not counted of him as strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath set to thee, do. Now you see, dear friends, God had taken what belonged to Jacob, what belonged to Jacob's wives, and to their children, and had given it to Jacob. And so the wives of Jacob say, now, you just go right ahead and do it, because what you've got is really what belongs to us. You're not taking anything away from him. But, dear friends, let me remind you that Laban claimed that they were still his, even though he had entered into these transactions. He says, those daughters, they're mine. He says, those children are mine. Those cattle are mine. He says all that to Jacob. We'll see. And so it says, Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, and the cattle of his getting which he had gotten, and paid him Aram for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. Now you see, dear friends, there are images. And they belong to Laban. But it is hardly possible that a daughter of an idolater could fall very far from the tree. Now, what is called an image here, the Hebrew word is teraphim, which is plural, means God. But no one knows exactly what these teraphim were. Certainly, they weren't intended to take the place of Jehovah God, because, insofar as Laban was concerned, he believed in Jehovah. But they were little household gods, like the Lares that the Romans had, little household gods, you know. Just what the nature of them was, at least they were intended to bring a blessing, to ward off, as it were, evil or iniquity. They might also have been used for divination, that is, to tell some secret that you wanted to know. Now, it isn't told to us as to why Rachel took these little gods, these teraphim. But you can guess, and I can guess. But after we get through, it's still a guess. So we're not going to be dogmatic about what we suggest. Your guess will be just as good as mine. I'm merely going to tell you what I think that they may have represented. If you don't agree, just forget. And neither one of us will be losing. It is possible that Laban might have used one of these little household gods to determine which way Jacob went with Rachel and Leah and the flock. used it for divination. In that event, Rachel could have taken it so that he wouldn't have been able to do that. But had that been true, she certainly wouldn't have saved it. She might have destroyed it. She might have thrown it away after she'd gotten far enough away. But this she did not do. So we're not inclined to think that it was a god or anything that might be used with the powers of divination. We're inclined to think that it was for an entirely different purpose. And that it was, perhaps as she had been taught in the household, that these little teraphim brought a blessing to the house. And where she was going, to her new house, her new home, she thought she might have need for such a little household god to be the means of bringing the blessing. Well, now, dear friends, I like to think of it in this way. You were once members, most of us were at least, members of the nominal church system. Well, the nominal church, they believe in Jehovah God, don't they? Of course they do. But they have a lot of little household images. And among these, I would say, is the concept that if we do something good, if we say something good, if we give alms, that will bring a blessing to us. That it won't make very much difference how good we are, but the good that we do will reap its reward. It will bring a blessing. And in this connection, I would just remind you once again of it. Dear sister, now in the truth, before she came into the truth, she was connected with the church. She used to do missionary work. She says, I'd get up before those women, I'd make them loosen up their purse straps so they'd give more money to the missionary movement. She says, and I felt that if anyone was going to heaven, I'd get to heaven because I did that work. Well, now you see, there is one of those little fetishes. It's one of these little household gods that belongs to your father's house. I mean the nominal church system from whence you came. Oh, but you say you don't do that. Are you sure? Don't you sometimes feel that you can justify yourself by the things that you do rather than what you are before God? Don't you sometimes seek a blessing because of the good that you've done, the good you've spoken, the words of cheer that you've given? All commendable, there's no doubt about it. But you've brought those along with you. But the time must come when you will learn that that to God is a strange God, that he will not share with any other God the glory and praise that belongs to him. It's not what you have. It's not what you're going to have. It's not what you give. It's what you are in the sight of God that counts. So we find as we go along in a later chapter, in the 35th chapter of the book of Genesis, where Jacob says something to his household. He says, and God said unto Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. Then Jacob said unto his household, and to all that were with him, put away the strange gods that are among you, and be ye clean. Now you see, these little teraphim, these little ideas, these little concepts that we brought along with us, they sometimes, you know, we hide them away. We sit on them. We don't let anybody know that we've got them. It's a secret fault. And we expect the blessing because of what we do. If you were to get a blessing because of what you do, just imagine what you'd get for what you don't do. Also, for the things that you do that you should not do. So God doesn't take that into account. My son, give me thine. That's what he wants. He wants nothing else but your heart. So, she took these images, but Jacob didn't know it. Of course, this is only a simile. It's not a type. There comes a time when our bridegroom tells us to dispense of our little teraphim, of our household gods, of these strange gods. The time comes. For a while, yes, you take them along with you, even as God winked at some of the things that the Gentiles have done. He could do this. Well, he could afford to do it. But anyway, the story continues. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban, the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward Mount Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. And he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey. And they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. Now you see, it was easy enough for Laban to overtake Jacob because Jacob was traveling with his flock. They couldn't travel as fast with flocks, with a herd of cattle, as they could with just men arrayed for battle. And so, while Jacob had the head start, in 7 days, Laban had overcome that lead. And now we find Jacob on Mount Gilead, and he sees his father-in-law coming after. His father-in-law was also his uncle. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night, and said unto him, Take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. This language, of course, is confusing. In your margin, you'll find that it says, Speak not to Jacob from good too bad. That you can understand easier. Haven't you sometimes had friends that come along to greet you and say, we're glad to see you, and so forth and so on, only in the next breath to take you to task and to begin to criticize and pull you down. Well, that's just exactly it. So he says here to Laban, he says, don't you do that when you get to Jacob. Don't you greet him and say nice things and then all of a sudden you take him to task. And so God would protect, as you see, Jacob. In other words, how often do you and I do that? We start in all right, greet each other. And before we've gotten very, very far, we begin to tantalize each other. Now, I didn't mean that at all. You've misunderstood. Yes, I know. That's just the way it goes. But at any rate, you see, God didn't only give visions to Jacob, but he gave these visions also to Laban. And he tells him not to start in speaking to him from good to bad. Well, that also implies he's not to start talking from good, from bad to good. But you see the character and the nature of Jacob, peace-loving, how it manifests itself, and how God blesses him for it. And before he's through, Laban is the one who asks for a covenant. Someone wants to slap you on one cheek. What do? Well, I just step on his toe. Ah, but you see, that's not it. You just turn the other cheek. You don't mean that literally, do you? I'm surprised at your question. Oh, you didn't ask the question. Oh, well, then it's all right still. At any rate, it says, then Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me, and carried away my daughters as captives, taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me? And didst... Oh, you see, he's not starting from good to bad, is he? Oh, no. So he goes on to say, wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me? And didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with song and with tabaret and with harp? How beautifully this portrays the human heart. I wonder sometimes, dear friends, whether we don't have within us a Laban and a Jacob. In other words, let's examine ourselves. Well, that's... After all, these are not just stories. They're recorded for our admonition, you see? Therefore, we've got to get something out of it. And so, you see, why did you run away? I would have given you a great big party. Oh, yes, he'd given them a great big party. Oh, but you know, in the Orient, they're figures of speech. They're hyperboles, they're exaggerated truths, you know. Everything goes beyond what the mere word might express. And so, and hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters, thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. What do you suppose would have happened if Jacob had said, Laban, I'm going to pack up, I'm going to take Rachel, I'm going to take Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah, I'm going to take all my flock, I'm going back to the land of my fathers. What do you suppose would have happened? A man like Laban certainly would have resisted that. It meant a great deal to him. He might have said, well, if you don't stay here, you're not going to take my daughters with you. You're not going to take those cattle. You'll go the same way that you came. I'll see to it. And that's probably what he would have said. But you see, God is there. And so he says, and hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters. How affectionate it becomes all of a sudden, you know. He'd used up all of their inheritance. There wasn't anything left for him. And he says, now, I would like to have kissed them goodbye. Oh, yeah. You know what kind of a kiss that was. Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing, and it is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob from good to bad. You see, dear friend, God interposes. Here's Laban. He says, I could do you harm, but your God. Oh, he doesn't speak of him as my God, but he says of your God. And Isaac speaks, or rather Jacob speaks of him as the fear of Jacob. He speaks of that God of Isaac as the fear of Isaac. So, and now, though thou wouldst needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my goods? You see, now he accuses. First, I was going to give you a party. I was going to send you away with mirth and timbrel and music and everything. We're going to have a great feast. And now, say, by the way, why'd you steal my goods? He calls them my gods, you see. Well, which is most important in the nominal church? The consecrated life or the life which is engaged in work? You will find that their gods are the work that you perform. You're not consecrated to Jehovah God, but you're consecrated to a work. And that's what we've got to watch out for. to see that our consecration is not to a work, but that it is to the will of God. And so, we find the story goes on, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid. That's why I fled. For I said, peradventure, thou wouldst take by force thy daughters from me. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them." That's an awful position to be in, isn't it? Let them die! Oh, poor Jacob, he would have died himself first, I think so, rather than Rachel. He loved her so. You know, as you read these things, something creeps inside of you. We're reading it, but if you had to live it, you'd know what it meant. I remind you again,
20 years away from home,
and then in that atmosphere. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent, and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images, and put them in the camel's furniture, and sat upon them, and Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And so she says to her father, "Let it not displease, my lord, that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me." And he searched, but found not the images. Now, you see, dear friends, she was taking advantage of her state or condition. And while the law was only given at Mount Sinai about uncleanness and not to touch that upon which a person that is unclean sits, nevertheless, that had been the practice among the peoples before the law, before it was set into the law by God himself for Israel. So that we find that even though this was before the law was given, the father did not dare ask Rachel to move. And had he disbelieved her, he would never have suspected that anyone in Rachel's condition would have sat on a god. You understand? So you see, God overrules all of these things. Now, you see, Laban didn't find what he was looking for. It was there, but he didn't find it. Now comes Jacob's turn. "You've accused me. Now let me tell you something." Oh, it's so human, dear friend. You don't have to. I don't really see why people go and buy all of these books to read these stories that are published today. There's a thousandfold more interest in these accounts if you just bury yourself in for them. And it says, "And Jacob was wroth, and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, What is my trespass? What is my sin, that thou hast so hotly pursued after me?" Now, in other words, first of all, you said it was because of the fact that I left your house and took your children with me. But really, the issue was your household gods, wasn't it? And you know the nominal church, they don't like you to do too much good because it takes it away from them, the glory. Of course, you can do as much good as you possibly can, but they would never credit you with it. If you do the good, you do it for some other reason. Well, whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, What hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge between us. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young. Now, that, of course, is an odd expression, but it means that the goat did not bring forth their young prematurely so that they would die. They brought forth only at the end of the due period of conception. And so he lost nothing by virtue of the fact that the young were always brought forth full and complete. And the lambs of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of the beasts I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it, and my hands at my hands didst thou require it. You see that? It's bad enough that you should be in charge of somebody else's cattle. But if they should die, you have to make good for it. Do you understand what that meant, dear friend? That wasn't all. You know, down there in the Levant there, or rather the Near East, you'll find that it gets mighty cold at night, and during the day it gets extremely hot. You might be perspiring so you want to throw everything else off in the noonday sun. And at night, as you lay on the desert sand, you want to wrap yourself up in blanket. The extremes of heat and cold are so great. Now that 20 years I served in that way. Thus I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost benight, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. You know, if the conditions were such, he just had to stay awake to take care of those cattle. He couldn't go to sleep. You know, sometimes you get so weary, you say, well, I just got to go to sleep, and that's all it's to, and then you go off. But here was his responsibility. At his hands was it required, and he was faithful. Now, it says, thus have I been 20 years. Really, the Hebrew would be, this 20 years in thy house I served thee. 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times. You see how he tells him, pause. Laban probably didn't know that Jacob was taking all of this in, because Jacob never said a word about it. But here comes the tally. He says, except the God of my father, the God of Abram, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. If it hadn't been for God interposing himself here the other night and telling you to speak to me kindly, you probably send me away empty-handed. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, now get this, dear friends, careful. These daughters, this is what Laban says, are my daughters. And these children are my children. And these cattle are my cattle. And all thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto thee? These my daughters are unto their children which they have borne. Now you see, he claims that all of this is still his. Did you ever see people like that? They give you something, it's still theirs after they've given it to you. Well, that's the case with Laban. He'd entered into these agreements, and now while these two were the wives of Jacob, they were his children. They weren't Jacob's wives at all, you see. And then he goes on to say, now therefore come, let us make a covenant. I am thou, and let it be full witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar.
Now, note, dear friends, after Laban just got all that he had on his chest off, mind you, after telling you what you are, you're a thief and you're a robber, you did this, all that you've got is mine, all to say, let's enter into a covenant. You see? Did you ever see people like that? Well, it isn't a case of whether you've seen them that way. It's just, don't you be like that. And so Jacob takes a stone and he sets it up for a pillow. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made an heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jigar Sabuhutha. But Jacob called it Gilead. And Laban said, the heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Gilead. And Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. Now you see, if Jacob had riled up and did any more than merely tell the facts of the case, the chances are that Laban was strong enough at the time to take everything away that Jacob had and send him away empty-handed, if not kill him in the road. But you see, sometimes you possess your soul in peace and quietness. And this is what he did. So in patience, he possessed his soul. And now he's won Laban. Laban is no longer an enemy. Laban is his friend. But Laban is a little fearful that he who was able to cause the flocks to prosper so might, under the divine arrangement which influenced the life of Jacob so much, make Jacob so mighty that the time could come when Jacob would turn around and go to Mesopotamia and clear Laban off the mountain. This undoubtedly is a thing that he did fear. And so he suggested that they have this and that, no one pass either one way or the other beyond that pillar. You stay on your side, Jacob, and I'll stay on my side. You see? And the Lord watch between thee and thee. Well, if thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this.